You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
So, let me close
off. I'm
going to close off.
More stories you need to tell.
I'm closing off that tangent. So that's the tangent on the tangent. And now let me close off the main tangent and let's go.
All right. You're listening. Oh, wait. Aren't you going to make some noise before I do this? You always do.
Who does? Me.
You're listening. You do. You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Descent Part 2. And I'm Lou from Nebraska.
I'm James from London.
And I'm Colin from England.
Colin from England. Warwickshire, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're married, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I'll be looking for your wife on Facebook soon, too.
Good luck with that. Not on there.
All right. James, how have you been?
Okay, so since we last spoke, and literally as soon as I came off the call with you guys last time, which was a while ago, I now admit, Star Trek Vegas has been postponed for this year. So I think I was talking about that maybe we'll be able to squeeze in, maybe, you know, it will be open up, but they sent me a letter and they said, or an email, and they said, hey, no more Vegas, not in summer, it's in December now. So I then said, well, I can't really make December, so I asked for my money back, and to show you how long it's been, they've already sent me my money back. So, you know, apologies for not having sorted out the recording sooner. But that's a bit of a bummer because I don't know how many people are going to go in December. They should really, you know, I would like to believe that I can roll it over to next year rather than to go in December. But there we are. But anyway, things have been good except for the fact that things have been extremely busy and the wife has been extremely ill, and we're generally just about surviving after however many months of lockdown it's been with five kids in the house.
You're still in lockdown?
Yeah. We're still in lockdown.
Oh, wow. No, things are opening up like crazy here. And, of course, you know, because of the...
We're not in full lockdown. The shops are open and stuff like that, but basically the pubs and restaurants are closed and the cinemas, but everything else is open.
So I got a phone call because, like, over the last, like, 5 or 10 days or so, there's been, like, much more push towards reopening. I got a call from my hairdresser. He said, oh, do you want to come in for a hairdress appointment? And I don't think I've had a haircut since probably January. And I did look at myself and I thought, no, I can probably do with a couple more weeks. But I felt sorry for the guy because he's not had much business. And I've booked in a hairdresser appointment for a week on Saturday, I think it is.
Well, like I told you, go to a store, get some clippers and just do it yourself.
No, look, we have to keep the economy going, okay? If I stop spending money at the hairdresser, then, you know, the knock-on effect will be very bad.
Okay. So, Colin, how about you? What's happening with you lately?
Not a lot, really. I mean, we're in the middle of a heat wave, so that's causing its own little problems. The heat wave for us is, it was 34 here yesterday, Celsius. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit. So that's causing its own unique problems, but aside from that, there's not a lot you can do because, like James says, nothing's open. So unless you want to go to the beach with all the other idiots and catch Corona, then there's not a lot else to do.
Yeah, we're starting to slowly open it a little at a time. Restaurants have been open at 50% capacity, so They've been spacing tables out, encouraging people to go out to the patio outside where they're, you know, the less contained. I think the municipalities are starting to open now, which we just bought our, we just got our daughter a car yesterday, a 2010 Kia Forte with 145,000 miles on it. So we gotta have, we have to get it plated, but of course the city shut down for now, so we have no choice but to drive it with no plates on. So what are you gonna do?
What? You could not drive it.
Well, yeah, you can for 30 days with what, you know, we have. I don't know if you guys have in transit tags there, but we have them here. Unfortunately, it was a private party sale, so we can't do in transit tags. So she's just driving around with no plates. She's got the title and the bill of sale, and that's in an insurance copy, and that's all you need to prove that.
Yeah, ours is different to yours, Lou, because once the car is registered here, that's it.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't been registered yet.
No, but I mean the dealer registers a car.
Oh.
So the person doesn't register it, the dealer does.
Oh. Well, what about a private sale from person to person?
You just have something called a logbook, which you send off to the DVLA, which is the Driving Association, and they just transfer everything. It's quite straightforward.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, and when you say without plates, you mean physically without plates?
License plates, yeah. You know,
because you don't get to keep your license plate when you sell a car.
Correct. You have to get a new one.
No. Oh, hang on. No, so the license plate belongs to the car, not to the person.
Correct.
Okay, so if someone sold you a car, then it comes with license plates, doesn't it?
Yeah. Let's say, well, we have her old car's license plates, but if we were to put these on the new car, she would probably have a felony traffic stop with guns drawn in hand.
But so, what happened to the license plates of the old car?
You can't just, since it's tied to that old car, you can't put them on the new car until it's registered.
No. When you purchased this car,
yeah,
how did it not come with plates?
Oh, the guy took them off.
But that, I mean, I've never heard of that happening. That if that's something normal in America, then it's something that divides us. Because
well,
that
no,
doesn't happen.
I don't think it would be legitimate to keep them on, because let's say she decided to do a drive-by shooting, and those plates are on the car under this guy's name. Well, they're just going to go to him, surround his house, no-knock search warrant him. And that poor guy, he didn't do a damn thing. He just happened to keep his plates on our car.
Okay, sure. So the thing that Colin was talking about, the logbook, sorts that out. So at the time when you buy a car, you get handed a piece of paper. Uh-huh. You both fit in, you know, your names and address, and then you put it in the post. And that basically says that from today, this car and its license plates now belong to someone else.
Oh, logbook. We don't have such a thing. I have no idea about that. Okay.
It's just the legal owner of the car. It's a document that holds the legal owner of the car.
Oh, title.
Probably.
Yeah, we got a title. He signed over to us. Now we go to the state and then we get our own title. Okay, well that's cool. Anyway, so about today's episode. The synopsis for tonight's episode is Picard tries to free Data from Lore's control, and the Enterprise battles the Borg ship. This is the season premiere of season 7. We finally made it after 6 years, I think. I don't know. We finally made it to season 7, episode 1. This was first aired on September 20th, 1993. And let's see. Never mind. Written by Rene Echeverria, directed by Alexander Singer. Guest stars for tonight's episode include Jonathan Del Arco as Hugh, Alex Datcher as Tate, James Horn as Barnaby, Brian Cousins as Croesus, Benito Martinez as Salazar, and there's something about him I wanted to tell you later. Michael Riley Burke as Goval. And Oh, wow. Okay. And Madgel Barrett, that is the ship's computer today. She is the narrator. I suppose that's the last
time. Next time on Next Stop. Oh, yeah. Last time, of course, not next time.
Yeah, she does a previously or last time, and then another guy does the next time. So, I think I've got everyone. So, what do we think about this episode? Colin, you're first.
Well, I think it suffers from the classic part two syndrome, where you build up the ramp, you get to the top of the ramp, and then you think, yeah, and then it falls off the cliff.
Mm-hmm. You get to the top of the ramp and you find out that you're afraid of heights.
Yeah. And so you go back down.
All right. So, James?
I don't think the cliff is too tall on this one. It's not. It's not a falling off the cliff. This is not. I think I'm probably in a minority because I do have the internet, and I have found that there are people on the internet with various opinions. But I actually don't think this one's that much of a come down from part one. I watched this again today, and kind of very happy and pleasantly entertained. I think this episode's good. I mean, why am I wrong?
Oh, it's not bad. I mean, it's not terrible. It's just...
It's not good.
You just have a bunch of scary Borg drones that aren't doing anything except for standing there and looking at their leader.
Does that matter?
Well, there's no... I don't know.
There's no sense of jeopardy.
No.
That's what's missing. There's no sense of jeopardy. There's no sense of foreboding. There's no sense of, oh my God, we're all going to die. There's none of that you had in the original Borg episodes. It's just not there.
Okay, well, but it depends.
Even when they're experimenting on Geordi, you know Geordi's going to be all right. This is episode one of season seven. We've got another 20-odd episodes to go. You know Geordi's going to be all right.
Well, okay, so maybe... Okay, how many Borg episodes have we had up until this point? So we've had iBorg, we've had Best of Both Worlds, and we've had Q-Who. And I do acknowledge that there is a sense of invincibility in Q-Who and in Best of Both Worlds. That's certainly true. There isn't really in iBorg, right? And maybe people don't like it because of that. And then in all subsequent Borg episodes from now on, you know, when you go back to the well of having an invincible opponent that you continually beat,
yeah,
you lose something. Whereas, so I don't actually see this. I mean, this isn't a Borg episode, right? There are various ex-Borg drones in it who are kind of useless because, you know, they're having to look up to Law and not being not necessarily controlled per se by Law, but at least within his kind of, you know, we'll use collective with a
well,
small
these,
C.
These aren't normal Borg because, as we find out, that the Borg that Hugh has spread the contagion to and spread the idea of independence to. So. Mm-hmm. These aren't the normal all-killing Borg.
No.
But this does set the precedent for where the writers went, because when you go to Voyager and they encounter the Borg, like you said, you know, Voyager, comparison to the Enterprise, Voyager is a small ship, and yet they consistently beat the Borg. And it diminishes who the Borg... When we first seen the Borg in the Best of Both Worlds, everyone was like, oh my God. And then by the time you get to the end of Voyager, the Borg are just, oh, they're just another species.
Yeah, you got that right. That's exactly true.
But
okay,
but there's nothing wrong with that per se, right?
But there is because it's basically, you've got, especially in Voyager, you've got a starship that is cut off from the rest of the Federation, 70,000 light years away. In the home turf of the Borg, with all their resources at hand. I mean, in the one episode of Voyager, when the Species 8472 come in, 15 Borg cubes go past Voyager. And that's just a small amount of them. Yet Voyager manages to outwit them every time. So it's diminishing what they created in TNG. And then as you go through TNG, the Borg get diminished. And by the time you get to the end, the Klingons are more scary than the Borg.
Yeah, right. No, he's right, James. I mean...
Well, I'm not saying that you're not right. what I'm saying is that it doesn't matter.
No.
So, okay. So, I mean, so let me just roll back here, okay? So this episode is not about the Borg. If we're coming into this episode saying, oh, let's see how this kind of huge threat plays out. This isn't a Borg episode. This is a Laura episode where he happens to have a small crew of aliens that could just as well be Ferengi rather than, or Klingons rather than Borg. It doesn't really matter. Now, okay, there's a little bit going on here in terms of we're going to experiment on the Borg, and there's a little bit going on in about the consequences of the actions that took place in Iborg and what that meant. But I don't consider this to be kind of like, a Borg episode in the same way that Best of Both Worlds is.
No, definitely not.
So that's the first thing. The second thing, though, that I'd mention is that you can't have an invincible opponent, an invincible antagonist that you can't reason with, exist in the series forever, right? You just can't have that set up within the confines of the world of Star Trek. It would have been probably a good idea for Species 8472 to have wiped out the Borg, or something similar to have happened. You can't continue to have, hugely powerful, unreasoning enemy sitting there forever. Now, I think you can get away with it the first few times in the sense that, you might not cross their path. You might only cross the path with a baby ship, and there's like the menace out there as well that might come at some point in the future, etc., etc. But you can't continue to have these, these experiences with the Borg collective and keep them on the level of invincible, right?
What about first contact?
Okay, so here's the thing. So when you say what about first contact, what do you mean by that?
That is the Borg at their ultimate level. The Queen's there, the Borg's there, they are ruthless, they are relentless, they are everything they was in The Best of Both Worlds.
Okay, so what I would suggest is that I'm not convinced that having first contact and what that then meant, which is basically the Borg queenification of the Borg and the general descent that we fall through as we go through a Voyager, I honestly don't think it was worth it. I would much rather them just, you can bypass first contact. I don't think you need a Borg story in first contact. So I think that if you had done right, Q Who, Best of Both Worlds, and then Scorpion in terms of the Borg arc, and then get them out of there, I think that's a much nicer narrative than sprinkling all of these Borg encounters throughout throughout history. And by the time we then get to Picard, right? I mean, the Borg had just been thrown around because they're a cool design, and
time you get to Picard, the Borg have been harvested.
I mean, what is the situation with the Borg in Picard?
They don't actually mention it, but all they do referencing Picard is the fact that, when they do find freed drones, so to speak, certain people harvest them for the parts, and the Romulans use some as basically a labor force.
I mean, is the implication that it was Janeway that caused all this trouble?
No, they don't indicate that at all. They're very carefully, Picard, not to reference the other incarnations of Star Trek so far. We don't know what they're going to do in Season 2, because we know we'll be Goldberg's in Season 2. So it'd be interesting to see where that goes. But at the only reference they've made
for
one of the things... Well, they had 7 of 9 in Picard, but they never once mentioned Voyager.
True.
Okay. So anyway, what do I think about this episode?
Yeah, what do you think?
Last time on Star Trek The Next Generation, Data experiences emotions. But first, he pisses off Sir Isaac Newton, has to correct several of Albert Einstein's easy mathematical calculations, while Professor Stephen Hawking cleans up on a game of poker. And then Data finds himself on an away mission in a fierce battle with the Borg. First, he gets angry, he kills a drone, and then that leads to his next emotion. Pleasure. Interesting. So he seeks help from Counselor Troi. No, she, you know, don't worry about the pleasure in Counselor Troi. She didn't shag C-3PO. She suggests he experience more negative emotions. So I think somebody's not up to date on her counseling certificate or continuing education. Speaking of the Borg, they no longer are driven by the primal need to assimilate. At least, not assimilate those who are not worthy, which would make up 90% of the galaxy. So who's left? The Pakleds? I don't know, maybe. Captain Picard is forcefully reminded of he had an opportunity to rid the Federation of a mortal enemy, and he regrets that inaction. And Blondie comes aboard to shake her finger at him and give him one last demeaning order. We find out about transwarp conduits. Two Borg beam aboard the ship to entice Data to join the winning team. And at the end of the episode, the Sons of Soon join together, and together they will destroy the Federation. And now, the conclusion. What do you think of the Sons of Soon are together, and together they will destroy the Federation? Think they got a shot at it? Two androids and a handful of drones?
Ain't got a hope in hell.
So actually, I was put up, obviously you land on that line straight away in this episode, and you know whatever's happened to Data, which is that he had a bit of an emotional experience, and then he ran off with a Borg. Mm-hmm. Which sounds like when you know teenagers night out, right? How does that turn into, oh by the way, we're back together, we're going to destroy the Federation? Why does that need to feature in his plan? Why not just, you know, sit here nicely on this planet with these Borgs and do whatever you want to do with your brother? you know, why destroy the Federation? Where does that come from?
I guess Lore doesn't like the Federation.
Yeah, they killed the Crystal Identity.
Oh yeah, his friend.
Yeah. So he's got beef. He's got beef because they killed his mate. Mm-hmm. Although it is a trope in Star Trek that everyone wants to destroy the Federation, but no one ever goes after the Romulans or the Klingons.
And you know how you know they're not going to destroy the Federation? Because they have three hostages, Picard, Troi, and LaForge. And what do? They put them behind a force field. Why is it the bad guy never just ups and kills the hostages? Get rid of them. You don't want hostages. What good does it ever do except
Norman
for
never
they
to be taken prisoner
them
by you?
What's that?
Want me never to be taken prisoner by you?
Exactly. I mean, why am I going to want you anywhere near my plans to take over the Federation if all you need to do is, you know, take a little, I don't know, one half an ounce thing and set it at the force field, and then boom, everything that I've worked for is done because you're smarter than me. Okay.
You gotta build a sense of, you know, it's like James Bond. I never just kill James Bond. They always come with elaborate ways to kill him, and he finds a way out of the elaborate way to kill him.
Of course.
It's all about building the momentum.
It's like any fight that you get into when there's one on multiple in a fight of martial arts. You know, let's say five guys against one, four of them will stand around, dance around menacingly while the one guy takes them all out one by one instead of all ganging up on him. That's easy enough. So back on the Enterprise, the sensors are down. And Ensign Tate, what do you think of Ensign Tate? Poor little Ensign Tate. She's been posted on the ship 6 weeks, probably straight out of the academy, and now she's a tactical officer.
Well, she's had a baptism of fire, that's for sure.
Ah.
I mean, she copes all right, but I mean, she makes a bit of a faux pas at the towards the end when she says that she's reconfigured the tractor beam and fires a phaser. But, you know, welcome to the flagship.
That's right. What are you going to do? So the Borg ships are approaching, and they're 90 seconds. No, wait, make that 70 seconds. They have 70 seconds to beam up as many people as they can and leave. And so the transporter tech, Salazar, now I told you about Benito Martinez. He is in a television show I've talked about many times called The Shield. He's their captain of their precinct, I guess you'll call it. And so when I saw him in this, I thought it was hilarious. Because he's a badass in that show. But anyway.
This is also where you get your 47 reference.
I was going to say, he was unable to beam up 47 people.
Yeah. That's your 47 reference.
Yeah. Arr. So, anyway. Let's see. Data's feeling angry, and does it make any sense that Troy can sense he's angry? It's not an emotional in a human way.
No,
it doesn't. It's digital.
It's because she's supposed to sense him. It's the script thing again. It's like one week she's an empath, one week she's a telepath. So it's that type of thing. But yeah, technically he's a machine. So can you sense emotions off a machine?
Yeah, Data, I could feel anger from you. You know, my response to that would have been, well, don't you remember telling me that I should start feeling angry or I should explore my anger? Well, here it is. Because that's what she said, isn't it? Like, you should explore the feeling.
Yeah, isn't this where she says this? There's no such thing as negative emotions, it's how you act on them or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Something along them lines. Which I thought was a really weird thing to come out with.
Yeah. Yeah, anger is not good or bad, it's the way you act on it. So she should have said, Data, I sense you're acting wrong. Which, actually he was. Anyway. So Data takes Geordi's visor away because he knew Geordi was seeing the link between him and Lore. Lore is controlling him. And then he tells Picard, I'm not your puppet anymore. You know, it's going to be hard to take those words back someday, you know?
Well, he could always apologize.
He did.
This is a bit where he takes the comm badges as well, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the phasers.
Weirdly, Data keeps his on.
Yeah. I guess if he has to call the ship sometime.
Just to let him know where he is.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they can use that to track where Data is. If he's active combat.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah. Beam him up. Oh, man, that'd be funny. Okay. Crusher. Quest the Rebel, huh? She's gonna disregard orders and go back to that planet. Get those 47 people as quickly as they can. After a little bridge squabble. What the hell was that about? Okay, so you have Ensign Tate, and then you have this other Ensign. I can't think of his name anymore. He's such an ass. What was that about?
Well, hang on. Lou, welcome to the patriarchy, right? This guy's just belittling the woman because she's a small woman coming out of the academy. I like these guys. I thought that the way that this was done was good because, you know, Crusher is good. She encourages them. These two have a little bit of a squabble, but you know, I think Crusher kind of keeps it under control. And they even have the, I'll just have to make sure that my calculations are accurate, Lieutenant, bit. Which is, yeah. I mean, do you guys not have the opportunity to say that during your work? Because I do. And I use that a lot.
Oh, strangely enough, no, it doesn't come up.
Really?
Yeah. You might be wrong on that. Well, I guess I won't be wrong then, huh? No, I think it'd be another extending the conversation as, okay, what's with the attitude today? Because, as you know, bosses are never wrong. Even when they're completely dead wrong, they are never wrong.
No, but he was...
Go ahead.
Bearing in mind this is supposed to be an enlightened future society, though, he was a git. You know, all right, she's new, but she's been through the academy, she's passed out, she's got a grade, she's been assigned to the flagship, which means she's no dumbass, because otherwise she wouldn't have got the flagship, she probably would have got a freighter or something. Mm-hmm. And he's just condescending.
Completely. But then again, he ended up eating a little bit of crow later, so that's good. So, Data and Lore together to do some counseling of their own of this poor little drone who's just, he has doubts about what they're doing, and he hasn't linked up to the others. What do you think about, I gotta say, for Lore being a complete jerk or just the really bad seed, I do kind of like his speech or his encouragement to the drone who is having doubts. Don't you? I can't do this without you. What do you say? Could you be one with us?
This is just full on. This is just full on Lore.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, basically it's the essence of this episode, which is about people who needing guidance being exploited by someone. You know, this is like, this reminds me of cults and stuff like that, where, you know, people who are lost or weak-minded or something, they get latched onto something that they don't really understand and end up going along for the ride. But this also tells us that they're all linked to one Borg. And he's like the main Borg. So, you know, or basically, would you, if you took him out, would then that, what would happen then if you took him out? If they're all linked to him, what would happen if you took him out?
Hmm. You don't think Lore has the ability to be one? What the hell is that?
I don't know. You still there, James?
Oh no! It wasn't on my side. I think it was with Lou.
Yeah. Oh. No. Somebody just saw. I just saw her glass fall right above me and shatter. Okay. Anyway, I'll have to check that out later. But anyway, no. I think it's so. Is Lore connected with these drone in any way? Can he read their thoughts and them read his, or if they could read his, then they would know they're doing the wrong thing, right? He's not.
No, they're linked to. They're linked to Croesus.
He's the main Borg.
He's the main Borg. Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was just 1 in 30, and he was having doubts. He didn't want to link with the rest.
No, he's the main one because he reprimands him for not being linked to him, and he says, "I told you all to link with him." So he controls the Borg through him.
Oh. I missed that part completely. Alright. Well, anyway, so LaForge believes if he can use a Cadian pulse, he can reconnect Data's ethical programming. But he has to figure out how to do it. That shouldn't be a problem. Data's ethical programming. So Lore is controlling Data. Well, how is he controlling Data? Is he shutting his ethical programming down? Blocking it? What?
Doc?
You there?
Yeah, so, I mean, okay, so first of all, it's his okay, so he has a program, which is his ethical programming. Now, it's a bit odd that you would have an ethical programming. It seems like something that you should clearly not have if you're an android. Like, a very, very clean to isolate ethical subroutine. So you can just go, switch off, you know, set Boolean to false, and now the guy is, you know, an immoral lunatic. That's not a design that you really should have. There's also a point that if he actually has an artificial neural net, it's not clear to me that that's even compatible with this concept of having all of these different programs, because usually when you have a neural net, you're taking like a heuristic view of of someone's so someone's brain and someone's kind of decision making process. So it's not clear that you would actually have the moral subroutine there anyway. But as far as I can tell, from this episode, he has a moral subroutine. It's been disabled in the same way they disable it with the Doctor and Voyager. And at the same time, it seems like they have that scene like towards midway through, maybe towards a little bit towards the end of the episode, where Law kind of like, you know, dials down Data's dose of emotion, and he's like a bit of a, you know, he turns into a bit of a child head. Oh, no, I want more emotion. Give me more emotion. Okay, a little more. I have no idea what Data's motivation is here, other than he's kind of, you know, something has been turned off. But we never really discussed that, right? We never really hear, you know, what is it about Data that leads him to go in this way? Now, he can go in this way because he's had his subroutine disabled, but is that all it takes, right? Is the only thing preventing you from going out and murdering your friends and family? Is it only the fact that you have morals that stops you doing that, or what? And I think that's something that's not really addressed.
Our ethical programming? Yeah. Maybe. Okay. Alright, so Data... Worf and Riker are captured. That was easy. Everybody's getting captured these days.
Let me just mention about that capture scene. Mm-hmm. It is one of the worst capture scenes that they've ever shot on Star Trek. It's like, dude walking up a hill with clear visibility of everything in front of him and behind him. La la la. Oops, look, there are 20 Borg. I mean, how did that happen? It seems like such a clumsy scene, to be honest.
They bollock cloak in Divox off the Jem'Hadar.
Yeah, must. Well, actually, oh, that's... I mean, isn't it much better when they have that effect, right? Where the Jem'Hadar just do the... and come into view? I mean, that's... That's
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. But they get captured by Hugh. Ain't that nice?
Yeah. So they think they're being captured, but actually they're being saved.
Sort of. Hugh's a little pissed, though. What do you want with this? What do you want, Commander Riker? So...
Yeah, this bit suffers from... We've got a two-parter. We need to give all the main characters something to do. That's what this bit is.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, Laura's trying to experiment on drones, right? What did he mean trying to remake them in his own image?
Just get rid of the biological, right?
Yeah.
That's what he means.
Because... The Borg are cyborgs, whereas he's an android. That does not sound good, Lou.
Hold on a second.
Whatever it is, it's big.
What was that?
I said whatever's fell down is big.
Yeah, wow.
It's so in like his basement, you know.
Yeah.
So it's landing on basically the floor. If it's landing on the roof above him.
Mm-hmm. Must be. There he comes.
I had a washing machine that made that noise once.
It might be a washing machine.
There's a difference to ours, though, isn't there? They're top loaders.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Never had a top loader. Did we never have any space?
Have a twin top back in the day?
What?
A twin top?
No.
Oh, my mom used to have a twin tub. That was a top loader. Washing machine on the left-hand side, spinning thing on the right-hand side. He said he was coming back.
He didn't say when.
No, I thought you said here he comes.
I thought it was. I thought it must have been someone else. Someone else is in his house.
I hope it's not his daughter reversing a new car. How come your wife's on Facebook and you're not? Doesn't interest you.
So, the wife's on Facebook because she likes people. I'm not on Facebook because of the compliment of that statement.
Alright guys, sorry about that. Somehow I'm going to have to figure out where we are. She wanted to put something on top of a tall shelf. She's 5'1", and of course, once she did that, things started falling off. Like, why would you even try to put things where you can't reach and you can't even see? Anyway, I don't know where we're at. Before to do
it, was that the rogue could have just been caught by Hugh?
Yeah. Anyway, and then Laura's trying to do experiments on the Borg to create them in his own image. Meanwhile, Data is doing experiments on LaForge. Small nitpick, but did you just happen to see Geordi's hands under the belt?
Oh, when yeah, he was the least secure guy.
Yeah, he actually almost pulled it out, but had to put it back in real quick.
Maybe he wanted to scratch his nose.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, sometimes you have to. You get an itch, you've got to scratch it.
Did you also notice when he put the probe into the side of Geordi's head? He put it on one side and then he pulled it out from the middle.
I miss that one.
Yeah, it's the same. It's in the same. He puts it on, I think it's Geordi's right-hand side, if I remember rightly. But when he takes it out from between the middle of his eyes. Maybe Geordi, you moved free hand.
Yeah. Both free, technically. But then again, what could he do? You know, Data would have stopped him. All right. So Picard plays possum. And he and Troy attempt an escape. Of course, they're going to try to escape, which is why you kill the hostages. But they get stopped. Right outside the door. They don't even get outside the door before they're stopped. And this time, surely, Laura said, you know, you people are just too much to deal with. Kill them. And that's what they did. No, they didn't. Nope. Well, and then, so they bring the Forge back. Did you notice the matchsticks coming out of his head? They called them fibers, right?
Yeah,
it
always
kind
of quite spooky.
It was. It looked like matchsticks.
Yeah, but this is also... This reminded me of Generations as well. When Geordi's being experimented on there, it's a very similar thing.
Okay. So the Enterprise arrives back to the planet. Okay, have you ever noticed also timing of when they give orders? And what I mean by this is we've got seconds before this Borg ship will come at us and catch up to us. So, the Enterprise arrives at this high warp to, until they almost hit the planet's atmosphere. As soon as they do that, boom, they do nothing until they're ordered to do so. Transporter room, start beaming up the people. Aye, sir. Why couldn't... It seems like they never coordinate. This is what's going to happen. As soon as we drop out of warp, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, and you're going to do this. They wait till they're out of warp, and then they give orders, just going through all those precious seconds. Do you guys ever notice that, or just me?
Yeah. Instead of saying, when we get there, I want you to do this, you to do this, and you to do this.
Yeah. Automatically. They should just do it automatically. It would save time. But nope, they wait until they're told to do the stuff that they were told they're going to do. All right.
See, they've done it. Well, as soon as they got there, and what, I got all 47 of them.
Right. I don't know if they got all 47 or not. Well, they couldn't have, because Worf and Riker were still
there. They actually said they left six behind. Which you assume is the away team and Data. Because if it's just the away team, then the other one must be like a security officer.
Right.
Some red shirt that's dead somewhere.
Yeah. During the escape attempt, Picard did kill a Borg. And he gets to use some of the stuff off his... I don't know what you call it. His devices that he has attached to him. Ain't that cool? I'm sorry. I'm just picturing this shattered coffee maker that fell down. Help me. Anybody want to talk about what happens next? Yeah.
Well, you want about when he reconfigures so he can bring the carrier arrive.
Right. But stops that reboots Data's ethical programming, or because you could see it takes effect immediately. Data and Lore are outside at one strong carrier wave, because all of a sudden you can see him going, are you sure we're doing the right thing? Do we really have to do this?
But it's like, Picard's not an engineer. I know he knows a lot, but he's not an engineer. But Geordi manages to talk him through reconfiguring whatever it is, techno thing that he's got in his hands. So Geordi, who can't see, manages to talk him through reconfiguring something that he's not familiar with to block a carrier wave that he knows nothing about.
Mm-hmm. Easy peasy.
I fail to see the problem here. This is exactly what happened as well in DS9, right, in Armageddon game, where O'Brien was the injured one and Bashir had to kind of reconfigure stuff.
Yeah,
And also in The Enemy as well with again the Forge. This is a well-worn trope.
Oh, they know everything. Oh, and we can't forget that the Enterprise, since they lost precious time delaying their orders, they lost their warp drive. Shields are dropping again. So Captain Crusher heads for the sun. Oh, and don't forget that metaphasic shielding thing from a few episodes ago, huh? Remember those good old days? Yeah? So they activate the program, and guess what? It works. Y'all had your doubts, but it worked. They head into the corona of the sun, and the Borg sit on the outside of the house waiting for them to come out.
So, I mean, isn't the callback, right, to the Seodin call? You barely ever have this, right? It's like on Voyager when they manage to get, like, the transwarp conduit working, and it's like, yeah, we never thought about looking into that ever again, or the transporter technology, or anything else. It's like, yeah, we thought about that once, and then we moved on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd be slingshotting around the sun all the time if I was able to do that. But anyway. So she starts up the old metaphysic shielding. Works just fine. Continuing with the experiment, LaForge tells Data he forgives him for what he's about to do. But what's he about to do? He's about to eradicate his existing brain cells. Why? What was the purpose of that? Did you guys get anything on that?
No, they're just going to wipe him, just kill him, right? So the whole point here is that they're trying to find a way to make the to remove the biological from the Borg, and they're just trying out this on Geordi. So they'll try to see whether they can replace his brain with an artificial neural net.
Hmm. Well, either way, he's getting anomalous readings in the brain scan, so he thinks he should just kind of hold off. Looks like that Cadian pulse is working just great. Alright, so we talked about the guy on the bridge. It's being a complete jerk, but he eventually gets shut down real fast. Let's see. The final showdown. Lore wants Data to kill Picard. But of course he couldn't do it. So, Lore decides to kill Data instead. Honor among thieves. That's what that's about. But he's stopped by Hugh and his band of rebel drones. Here's a question. I don't know if you guys ever thought of this or if it's just my demented mind. You have got this melee of fighting. It almost looked like a wrestling cage match where they're just knocking everyone out one by one. How do these drones know who's who? Who's with Lore? Who's with Hugh? Because they all look the same.
The Physis are still different. So if the Physis are still different, and if the Borg are enhanced, maybe they can remember the individual Physis.
I suppose. I mean, it just seems like Borg everywhere. Are they just fighting each other? I don't know. There's too many Borg to know at the time that they're fighting each other that, oh, you're with me, sorry. You're not, I'll beat you up. Or I'll kill you.
Yeah, there's probably a couple that got, you know, beat up by the same people.
Friendly fire?
Yeah, friendly fire, yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, they began fighting each other. All right. During the melee, as I call it, Lore tries to escape, but Data shoots him. Now comes a necessary act, deactivation. He deactivates him.
See, now they changed this. If you look on Memory Alpha, the original plan was he was just going to shoot him and kill him. But they wanted something a little more, less overt, shall we say. So he stuns him and then deactivates him.
Just in case we want to meet him again someday in the future.
Yeah, but we never do. We never see Lore again.
Oh, wouldn't that be a nice Season 2 Picard episode?
Well, yeah. How would you... What about Lore now being like 25 years older? How does that get explained?
Well, I mean, when android parts are deactivated, they tend to
age.
Warp.
Yeah, but Brent Spiner has already said he wouldn't play Data and Lore again.
Ah. Yeah.
He said he'd play the human character, but not Data and Lore.
What if they offer him more money? You never know what would happen. Okay.
Well, he definitely can't play Data because, you know, spoiler, folks, if you haven't listened to Picard, turn it off for about 30 seconds. In Picard, Data is definitely gone.
Shut down.
Yeah.
I didn't believe that for a second.
No?
Well, you don't believe he's gone?
Well, he can't be gone. Okay, so if being on a Romulan ship that then explodes doesn't kill you, why do we think formatting a USB drive will kill you?
Because it wasn't a Romulan USB drive.
Mm-hmm. So you don't think it happened, huh? I never would have thought Picard would be an android now either. So, you know, hey, things do change.
Spoilers.
Expect it. Oh.
Yes.
Were we still in the 30 seconds?
No, we did tell him to jump forward 30 seconds, so, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, watch Picard if you want to know what happened. Data rejoins the crew and gets a visit from Geordi. Data's about to destroy the emotion chip, but LaForge stops him. Ah, wait. Don't fire that phaser. My hand's in the way. Maybe someday you might want this. Never know.
You'll know how that went.
Yeah, well, you know how that turns out, too. Okay. Did I miss a lot?
You missed Beverly taking the Borg ship out.
Destroying the... What? I'm sorry, yeah. I didn't hear you.
You missed Beverly destroying the Borg ship.
Oh. She did something right, then.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, she kicked ass.
Good job.
All right. And it's a pretty good trick that they have, right? Which is, you want to make a solar flare by doing stuff. And sending the thing down and gets blah, 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 poof. It's all cool. And Crush is good. Really, Crush is good.
Yeah. It worked.
The only faux pas is, she says it's the tractor beam, but the thing comes from a Pfizer bank. So that's
crazy.
That's just like, you know, someone didn't line the beam up properly when I was doing the CGI. So.
Well, you know, sometimes you see that phasers don't work, so then we'll use torpedoes, and sometimes torpedoes won't work. So then we'll use a deflector dish to beam something out, and that usually works.
Yeah, but this bit of technobabble made more sense than the block in the carrier wave technobabble.
Yeah.
So... This just felt more believable.
Okay. So we are now at the point where we're going to give our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. Colin, how about you? What are you thinking?
I'm going to give it 3. There's part of it that, you know, like we've already discussed Riker getting captured so easily, even though he knows he's beaming into what could be a conflict situation. There's pluses where, because basically this episode is about, like I said earlier, it's about the vulnerable being exploited. I suppose to them, Law's the charismatic saver who's going to bring them to greatness, and all he really wants to do is have an army of Laws. But a lot of it felt half-formed. You didn't get any sense of urgency, you didn't get any sense of trepidation, knowing what we know now about the struggle with season 7, you kind of look at it with different eyes, but even at the time when I watched it, I did feel that there was no, I knew Geordi was going to be alright, I knew they were going to be escape, and, you know, so you lost that sense. So that's why I'm giving it a 3.
Okay. All right. Same with me. I really don't have much on this. You're right. Part 2 is not quite as good. You really should kill the hostages if you're going to take hostages. Don't give them the opportunity to eventually escape and destroy your plans, especially when they're such large-scale plans, as in destroying the Federation and all its multi-thousands and thousands and maybe hundreds of thousands of ships that you'll have to get past to do it. Especially for 2 androids and a handful of Borg. One of which is a little scared about things and needs to have his hand held by Lore. I don't like Lore. I don't think I've ever liked Lore, and I don't think I ever will. So... Nah, I don't get in. I've never got into Lore. You know, even when Wesley said he heard Dr. Crusher knows how to turn them on. Whatever. But this isn't a horrible episode. But like you say, I'm at a 3 as well. So James, why a 4?
Okay, so it is a 4.
I don't know
how you got that right. I like Lore. Lore is good. So, you know, I can, like, relate a lot to the Data character, and then you have this, like, almost older, cooler brother that is, you know, that doesn't have any of the social anxiety problems that you do and can relate a lot easier to others. And you know, he goes off for a couple of years, and you realize he's got a cult following. I mean, this is something to look up to. This is why Data was so quickly, very happy to jettison his career in Starfleet and to join up with his brother. Okay, can we at least agree that, you know, Brent Spiner's performance in this episode is great? He plays Data well. He plays Lore really well. I mean, to the extent that I can only imagine that Brent Spiner himself is a bit of a dodgy sleaze bag that bears no relation to Data, but he's a lot more like Lore than he should probably be. We didn't talk about that scene where he comes in and he pretends he uses the Picard voice. He does a trick on Geordi. That's good. That's good. I don't know. I'm a sucker for Data. I'm a sucker for Data episodes. I don't consider this a Borg episode. I'm not disappointed that the Borg are kind of useless and, you know, never get back to the state they were in the Best of Both Worlds. But yeah, I just enjoy this episode. It's not as good as the first part, of course, because it doesn't hit you with this huge great ending where, you know, where they unveil that Lore's all behind this all along, and it is a slight, you know, gear shift, of course. But yeah, I think like a 4 out of 5 in my mind, it seems fair. I've always enjoyed this episode, and if it is true, and I think it is right, that we never see Lore again, that's a shame. He's a great antagonist and a great reflection of Data. Now before he can sod right off. Mm-hmm. Well, why would you have? You know, you've got this perfect, you know, person and the dark twin. Well, how do you introduce a third? It just makes no sense.
Okay. All right. It's a 4 then for you.
Especially because everything they did with B4 could have been done by Lore.
Save it when you do Nemesis, James.
I really don't get the Nemesis thing. It's confusing to me.
Nobody gets a Nemesis thing. All right, Colin, thank you very much for coming on. I know you had fun.
I did. Pleasure as always.
As always. I have you next for the Pegasus, episode 12.
Yeah.
I'd like to say that would be in 12 weeks, but...
It will be.
Things happen. Really?
12 weeks. Put it in the calendar now.
Put it in the calendar.
Here's confidence for you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, so anyway, guys, hey, thanks for downloading and listening to tonight's show. So catch us next time as we review episode
2.
You know, James, I'm sorry, I don't even know what it's either going to be episode
the
2
next
or
episode, folks.
Either
it's the next one.
Episode or the movie, whatever movie we still have to do. Bye bye.
Oh. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Bum-ba-dum-bum-bum. Okay, I'm going to stop the press the button to record, and I'm going to turn my PC back on because it's so noisy.
Okay, and I'm going to wait for the link that says that I can download your recording.
Yeah. Actually, so whilst we're recording, I get...